And possibly I should put it differently. Using the girls don't have a right to stand. Thank you very much. And then I think you are making our life a lot more easier. I think this past 7 minutes or so, we may have delayed by that, but I think it was necessary for some sort of conferring, discussion, consultation, teaching, and all sorts of things. They happen within 7 minutes. I can guess that we are now ready. Today I think we have got two big jobs, but that will take us a very short time. And we are going to consider the responses or the input that we have received, basis of our advert, the invitation to the public for them to comment on the amendment bill, on the local government electoral amendment bill. And also, we are to consider the BRR report for Home Affairs. I just want to indicate to members as well that I have noted that there is a document, the report that has been referred to this committee in relation to the financial report, and I think it's also the general report on the funds for party representatives from the IEC. It has been referred to us for reporting. One of these good days, then we'll entertain the IEC on that specific report and report back to the House. And then we'll just indicate it on the system. And also, of course, is that before I move any further, is to really indicate two things that have happened recently. One is that we welcome the appointment of Commissioner Mashinini as the chairperson of the Electoral Commission. And today it looks like it's the first day that he's here wearing that particular cap. So thank you very much and welcome to the party. And we are really happy on your appointment as a committee, and we hope that you'll bring the necessary vigor and drive to actually get the Electoral Commission to higher levels of integrity and also you would make sure that the IEC continues to deliver on its mandate in relation to elections in the country. Thank you very much. And also, we just want to indicate as well that all of us may have heard, I think, that the Cabinet has approved the recommendations that were made by the Interministerial Committee, which was led by the Deputy President, on matters relating to the immigration regulations, on the possible unintended consequences. And we will await the Department to come and the committee, because on the recommendations that have been made and approved, there are certain issues that the Department has to deal with, especially the legal framework to actually ensure that those decisions then are implementable. So they will have to come and brief us and also tell us what is that they are doing in relation to those few steps that need to be taken. And we really want to make a call to the public that while the Department is working on the modalities of implementing those particular decisions, the public should try and comply with the current requirements. Try and comply with the current requirements so that we don't have drama at our ports of entry. We don't have unnecessary drama at our ports of entry. And when the Department has sorted out all those things and given the necessary instructions to the relevant officials at particular ports of entry and in offices where some of the decisions have to be taken, then they will actually make the correct announcement at the relevant times. Thank you very much. And then we have received apologies from the Deputy Minister as well as Honorable Maxson and the other members that are not here are expected to be joining us as we move forward. Unless if there is an 11th hour apology that would come from the floor, and of course that we may need to understand whether the minister is going to be around, the Minister of Home Affairs, because we have got an apology for the Deputy Minister. Whether there is any intention for the minister to join us or what, and then we'll hear if there is any from Varso Sermandlana. And then I think you can indicate whether you know anything about the minister coming.
The minister is in cabinet now, as we speak. They say GNA. It's not going to come.
Okay, no, thank you very much. And then I thought I had a call. You are speaking. Honorable Kenny, because it looks like you are still enjoying something there on the desk. Okay, okay. No, thank you very much. And then, honorable members, I think let me then, without any ado, and then just indicate, or let me just give an opportunity to the chairperson of the Electoral Commission just to introduce the delegation that he has, and from then we'll move to our content advisor to actually speak to the input.
Thank you very much, chairperson and members of the committee. Firstly, for the warm welcome that I've received, and further to take the opportunity to invite my colleagues to introduce themselves and indicate their responsibility. But we are pleased, more than anything, that this day has arrived, that we are now at the brink of a completion of this amendment, which was a very critical prerequisite for us to advance towards the preparation of next year's municipal local elections. And Chair, once more again, thank you. I'll invite my colleagues to see you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mosotho Moepia. I'm the Chief Electoral Officer, and behind me is my colleague, Sai Mamabolo, Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Electoral Operations at the Electoral Commission. Next to him is Mr. Lungisi Gelembe. He is manager in the Commission Commissioner's Office. Behind them, I have Ntate Ngwenya and Ntate Sibele Meja from the Department of Home Affairs. And that's us dealing with the issues for today. I don't know, Chairperson, if we can go straight to the heart of the matter, or you would want to deal with formalities.
No, you come at the end. It is not the time you do the listening. You did the talking last time. Now it is for others to do the talking, then you must respond.
Okay.
And then you wait for them to do the talking.
Okay.
And then the person that is going to talk is Adam. Adam, tell us what you have heard since the last time the IEC spoke us.
Good morning, Honourable Minister and Honourable Guests. We only received two submissions. The one was from the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, specifically in KZN. and the other was from the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference. I've just done a two-page overview of what the submissions entail and the issues that might arise. Members might be aware of this kind of issue happening where basically there's contested authority as to who's responsible for expelling members that have been allocated on a list in local government elections. And so there was some confusion. These are the points raised by the COPTA, specifically in relation to 27 C and F of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act. So in terms of that act, if you'll see under those bullet points, basically a councillor vacates an office during the term if that councillor was elected on a party list, referred to in Schedule 1 or 2 of the, and ceases to be a member of the relevant party, or was elected to represent a ward, was nominated by party as a candidate in a ward election and ceases to be a member of that party, or was nominated by party as a candidate in a ward election and becomes was not nominated by a party and then becomes a member of the party. So basically, who's responsible for indicating to the IEC who once these posts have been vacated. So the GOCTA is suggesting that there's amendments to the clause 1 of the bill, which relates to section 1A of the Act, which is an introduced definition. The definition proposed by the IEC is there in normal letters, so authorized representative, and then what GOCTA is proposing is that the letters in bold be added. So currently, as the definition stands, is an authorized representative in relation to a party means a natural person authorized by the party in accordance with its constitution to act on behalf of the party for purposes of submitting a party list or nominating a ward candidate. Now, they want the additional responsibility for that authorized representative to also inform the municipal manager of a municipality where a party who is elected councillor ceases to be a member of that municipal party, so as to alleviate these confusions. Now, apparently there is also a draft bill going to cabinet at the moment on the Municipal Structures Act, but we haven't seen it yet, so I'm not sure what's contained in it. So the few questions that arise in relation to the submission, which the IEC will also, I'm sure, address in their responses, is there's no reference to an authorized political representative in the Municipal Structures Act, where it is mentioned in the Municipal Electoral Amendment Act. So the question is why, okay, so their response, which they gave to us ahead of time, was that we should rather include this amendment or this definition as part of the Municipal Structures Act. So the question is why can't it be inserted here, because the bill as it stands, Municipal Structures Act bill as it stands, currently has no reference to a political representative, authorized political representative. Secondly, the question is, if this authorizing or informing of a vacancy is not done by this political authorized representative, whose responsibility should it be as far as IEC is concerned? And then lastly, the issue raised by COPTA is in relation to legislation that it oversees. So it's talking about amendments that it could do in its own act. So the question is, should it also be done by the IEC in this amendment, and would there be any negative side effects if they also amended the definition of an authorized representative in this act as well as in the municipal act under COPTA? Then secondly, the South African Bishops Conference had two issues that they raised. One was that they were concerned that the temporary identity certificate is being removed in the current amendment to the bill, basically reference to this. It is, however, still referred to in the Identification Act. So the Identification Act, specifically Section 16, is listed over there, which also allows one to use a temporary identity certificate, and also says that that can act as an identity card, which is what is referred to in the electoral amendment bill here. So their proposal is to amend clause 1, section 1B of the bill so as not to delete reference to the temporary identification certificate. So it would look like this instead of the way it's proposed. Currently, the B as it stands there, which is what they were to substitute. And the stuff in brackets over here is what they want to take out and insert rather this reference to the identity card as the identity act has been eliminated. So the proposal from the Catholic bishops is that the temporary identity certificate must be removed unless adequately dealt for and adequately informed that reference must be made to the Identification Act. Then their second concern is that even though Section 49 of the Principal Act has had the word accidentally removed, it's still possible to interpret this as that only people who have made a mistake on their ballot papers will be able to get another voting paper before they actually put it in the box. So their proposal is to clarify the fact that even people who change their minds should be able to get a new ballot paper. Specific reference should be made to this. So clause 5, which deals with section 49 of the Act, should substitute the following. So the amendment as the currently stands is all the stuff in not bold, and what the Catholic bishops are proposing is to add what is in bold there. So accidentally has been removed, there in the brackets, it says, if a voter marks a ballot paper in a way that does not indicate for whom the voter wishes to vote, or if the voter, having marked the ballot paper, changes his or her mind about whom he wishes to vote for, and the ballot paper has not yet been placed in the ballot box, the voter may return that ballot paper to the presiding officer or a voting officer. So it's just basically specifying that even if you change your mind. So those are only two matters. I'm going to switch over now to the presentation for the document that the IEC or the PHA legal team sent us. I'll allow them to speak to it. Thanks, sir.
I have heard you, and I hope that the relevant copies have been given. The copies, you have the copies. The IEC, you have looked at them, and I think we will just need to respond to these provisions that they have made. I'm not sure whether I'm a sensationalist. When we just say, you know, anybody who just changes mind inside the voting booth, others mark the ballot paper and then goes back and ask for another one. And if we have got a group of 100 that are not interested to vote, they just come and mark the ballot paper and ask another one, mark and ask another one, just to defeat the voting, the ballot papers in the voting station and frustrate the IEC and the elections. What's going to happen? I'm just giving the extreme, where you just have a group of people that are in a good number, in a particular voting station, just decided to frustrate the elections, not having interest to vote, instead of actually staying at home, then they say, no, let's go and just simply deplete the ballot paper in there, and just mark, go back and ask another one, mark, and then go back and say, no, I've changed my mind. Up to when can a voter change his or her mind within the voting station? Because there must be some sort of management so that we know how many ballot papers you can dispatch to a voting station, and we think that that number should be adequate to actually accommodate all those that are willing to vote. But if you just open and say people can just mark, go back and say, no, I'm not throwing this one in, I want another one, I want to mark differently. He marks, and then he asks another one, marks another one, he marks 10, 20 of them. When does the electoral officer say no is enough? It is not in his submission. It's just simply open. But not this, the mechanisms to actually have ill discipline. I was not raising it for the member just to pick that one, because the other ones, they look to be reasonable within the context. And, the IEC, let's hear from the IEC, and then we'll speak to that after we've heard even their responses. You can lead.
Thank you, Chairperson. We do have the responses that we have considered, and I will present them in brief. We shall begin with the one that we received from the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in KwaZulu-Natal. It is true that the circumstances that they describe do pose some challenges at this stage, and to that extent we've had extensive discussions with the National Department of COPSA in relation to the local government municipal structures act of 1998. It is important to say that we are aware that they are going to be bringing their legislative amendments through the parliamentary process, and it will those amendments, amongst others, will deal with this issue in part. We point out that the addition to the definition would be better placed in the Structures Act, as there is a clear connection in that Act than there is with our Act, because the content and the provisions that this definition relates to are found in the Structures Act and not in the in the local government municipal electoral act. The issue of vacancies is dealt with in that act extensively. And as they make those amendments, our inputs will be included in those amendments as well. I move to the second submission.
So in clear terms, you are saying is you are not recommending for amendment to this definition?
No, we are not.
Okay. Move on.
In relation to the first submission that has been received from the South African Catholic Bishops Conference, the issue they raised in relation to the definition of identity document is one that we have considered carefully with the Department of Home Affairs, who deal with the Identification Act of 1997, and they have confirmed that that act, particularly Section 16, does deal with the issue of a temporary identification certificate, which for purposes of the work that we do is regarded as an identity document. And effectively, the question or the fear they have is that if we do not include the temporary identity certificate, we may in fact disenfranchise voters. We have confirmation that they will not be disenfranchised because the definition does provide for them. There will therefore be no person who is in possession of a temporary identification certificate that will not be entitled to vote.
Now, I think we may proceed, because I think even the day when you came here, this question I think was raised by Honorable Hussein. I think it was liberated now, and so I can understand that this particular section also the identity document includes in this temporary identity certificate. I think maybe people just need allowed confirmation,
yeah.
And possibly you are doing it on record. Please.
Yes, no, so we do confirm that, Chairperson. Thank you very much. The third one, Chairperson, from the South African Catholic Bishops Conference, or the third submission, but second from the South African Catholic Bishops Conference. It's a very handy addition indeed. Although initially we were looking at persons who had accidentally marked the ballot, it does equally apply to persons who may change their minds, and in that respect, we agree to the proposal that they made, and we are happy to have that incorporated in the amendment.
Okay, Okay. I think, are you saying the whole lot? Because what is happening is that in the act itself, the amendment was not necessarily very clear. But it was clear in the memorandum. In the memorandum, it's very clear. So we'll make the correction in the act to actually make it much more clear. But now, the question that I was raising was to have abuse for wrong reasons. And then can we just, if you don't need to respond now, because you must consult the duties around there, and then at the end, after the members have actually spoken, then you can just brief us whether you want to go and sleep with it, or whether you can actually speak with it. The mechanism of ensuring that within legally, the mechanism of having an abuse of this particular provision that you are opening for people that have legitimately made a mistake and want to correct it, but then not to be abused by others. We must find some ways of putting some little traps there that no, you can't go beyond here. It's no longer a mistake. It looks like now you are up for something. So it's if you can talk to yourselves, and then at the end, after members have actually spoken to you, the input together with responses, and then you can indicate to yourselves what is there that you think can be done. But it needs you to go and have the comfort of your offices to think properly and craft this thing properly. I don't think it would be, because it's definitely a new thing that comes up in front of you. Okay, you may proceed to the other ones.
There were three of those, and I have not dealt with all three of them.
Yes.
Unless there are questions that members wish to raise, which we shall get.
Okay. If that is the case, then it's fine. So among the three submissions, honorable members, then the IEC says yes to the last one on the possibility of giving new ballot papers where voters wants to express themselves correctly than the way they would have done it before. And of course, because we want everybody to vote and express their intention on the ballot paper, then this must be open. And then I think they are agreeing that it actually improves the elections. And then, but I'm sure you have heard that I'm really worried that it should not be abused. Then you must find a mechanism of ensuring that it's not abused. The other ones, and then the identity document, we spoke a lot about last time, and then this one now of authorized representative. Of course, this one, we all, even here in Parliament, I'm sure we still have this kind of a problem, where a political party says, no, this member is no longer a member. Write the answer to the speaker, and then 2 weeks down the line, then another grouping of the same political party, then write another letter, contract, say, no, that member is still intact. And then we have got chaos now in the office of the speaker because of a party that is in conflict with itself. And then I think this particular problem needs to be attended to. And but what we're hearing from the IEC is that this particular amendment to specify a person in a party that will communicate to the municipal manager or the IEC in terms of people that have vacated their positions or they have been removed from their positions or recalled from their positions is better placed in the Municipal Process Act. Now, the question that will arise is that until the Municipal Practices Act comes and approved and wait until the day that the President wants it to be effective, the status quo, the drama that we are having, will continue. The drama that we are having, will continue. Yes. And then whether we shouldn't have a transitional arrangement, I think we can discuss that. Whether shouldn't we have a transitional arrangement, try and leave that particular thing gets sorted out. while the municipal structures act is not in place, why can't we put a transitional arrangement that this representative then become the person that could just streamline the communication from party to the authorities and the rest? Let's talk about that. Yes, so that the transitional arrangement may not be one of the biggest problems, because the main act will come and take over, and then if it comes in. Honorable members, you have heard me, you have heard Adam, and then you have heard the IEC, the CEO, led by the chairperson. What are your views, Honorable Hussein? Just look for it.
Yeah.
And because the different committee rooms have got different designs, and everybody is trying to get this design technology to Parliament.
It's possible.
Yes, it's possible.
Okay, thank you very much. I agree with your last comment, actually. I think that there should be some sort of transitional arrangement, because it does pose a problem. But I also understand the difficulty that that the IC sits with. But if perhaps in the response here, if we can just understand, I mean, to what extent will it create a problem if we do include the part of the authorized representative here? And there's a problem having it in two separate pieces of legislation if it's saying the same thing. But while we're on the point today of the authorized representative, something that I'd like the IEC to just give some thought to and respond, in that although for practical reasons you want to have a single person that the IEC can rely on to give instructions on behalf of a political party, in practice it creates a lot of a problem, especially as we're approaching now the local government elections. So you can imagine, whilst that specific provision of the Act is making it easier for political parties to submit documents to local offices, and then you say there must be one rep from the party, which means there's one national rep, calling a national rep. So whilst you're trying to make it simple for political parties to submit documents at a local level, it means, you know, very much that must run from Joburg every time you want to submit documents and get it in, and he must sit and sign every single document that you have to submit. So practically, it becomes a bit of a problem. And if you can give some thought to that, one possibility is of having a provincial representative. But anyway, you guys are the believers in it. If you can maybe just give that some thought. Then, Jay, if I can just get an absolute clarity on the temporary identification certificate. Did I hear you correctly when you're saying that the definition will be amended to cover the what exactly an ID document is? Or is it going to include the temporary ID? I agree with you, Jay, also on this issue about changing one's mind and how it can be used as a means to frustrate the process and deplete ballot papers and all of that. But equally so, one can do it anyway if you spoil the number of ballot papers and you deliberately vote for two political parties. So there's also that problem that is sitting there. So if you take this one out, you'll hope to achieve this. Cook will soon be able to achieve the same thing if he so chooses. And then the last... we're dealing with the submissions now. I don't want to maybe bring in anything additional over and above. I'll do that at some other point. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, well, I think they'll respond on the temporary identification. I think we have not said that there's a need to amend or the definition, because the current definition of an identity document includes that temporary identification certificate. That is included. I think that's what has been said. And I think that is the thing. And then, of course, is that the comment that you have made in relation to the spoiling of ballot papers, at least when they spoil the ballot paper, then there's a certain number of ballot papers that you can spoil. But when you are actually intending to abuse the system, because you are giving you a right to another ballot paper, then you can do it 10 times. You can do it 20 times. As long as the IEC doesn't have mechanism of KP in terms of regulations or whatever, that how many times can a voter in a voting station ask for another ballot paper? There must be some sort of reasonability. I know that they see you can't determine and say a person can change his mind or her mind 20 times or 100 times at any given time. No, it can change. But for some reason, there must be a reasonability to say how many times will we allow that to happen, and so that you have the number of papers that the voter can score, deliberate. But the party that decides not to vote, then they just have to put cross across the whole paper. At least that voter will spoil only that one particular ballot paper. And then at least it will be kept to the minimum. But the decision of really messing up elections, you will never know. If there are 100, I mean, they can mess up 1,000 ballot paper in one day before they actually get out of a voting station. So for some reason, it's
thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to firstly add in my weight to the very last point, the point which you were making now, Chairperson, on the misuse of ballot papers. I think we will need, even if we do say, you know, the elections have got to be free and fair, and every reasonable move has got to be taken in order to ensure that people do vote. I think in the end, Chairperson, we will need to get a specific number of how many ballot papers a person can keep on saying, you know, I voted for the wrong person, I voted, because definitely it will be abuse. I think in the end, we will need to agree that there is a particular number. And then as long as that, that statement is conveyed to the populace or to the population, then we will know that people do understand. Because definitely it can really cause havoc in a voting station. If we have one person just, or a group of people like you stated, I was thinking about it when you said it, and I could see havoc reigning in a particular place where now we have to call in the police and everything else. So we need to anticipate those type of situations and ensure that they do not actually happen. And I think, Chairperson, I would like to change the wording. And I think the Chairperson said the IEC is asleep with this issue. I think I would just like to change the Chairperson and say they can sleep on it.
I appreciate the help.
And lastly, Chairperson, on the issue of the first issue of KwaZulu-Natal, the one that was played by Lionel Pina, I'm aware of the challenge that are placed in KwaZulu-Natal, especially over the Minister of Local Government and all the challenges that she has been faced with, as well as misusing at times, you know, the Structures Act and the Municipal Act, and not actually acting in a way that has shown in any way that we are working towards addressing this matter. I think they, as well, as it's stated here, as the COO has actually mentioned where it needs to be structured. I think he said it needs to be placed in the Structures Act. Please let's do that so that we address that matter. Presently, we have seen over time how political parties have been playing around with a lot of the letterheads, as it's stated here, where you find that a grouping comes, Chairperson, with a letterhead, everything from the party, and then you find that the following day another grouping comes with a letterhead. So there is need, even in political parties, for a main person to be known to be dragging that process. Like, let's say, for instance, I think Honorable Hussein spoke about Ubaba Ukwege Mantash signing up. Yes, we do that as political parties, as SGs. You do the signing, but you don't need to take the stuff to the IEC. As long as the IEC knows that the SG signs for this, and it comes from the SG's office, and they can verify, or it comes from that particular office, and you can verify, I think that would assist. Otherwise, if we have different people bringing in information, the situation which Honorable Hussein has spoken about will happen, where you find that any document, any person just signed, we need to have dedicated people that assigning, otherwise it's going to create a problem. Presently, also in KwaZulu-Natal, I'm aware that there is quite an exodus of councillors that have been fired from a particular political party, about 90 or so. And I'm aware as well, citizen, that those letters now have started coming. So we need to really fine-tune these processes so that everything needs to work in a proper way, place in the structures, act and know what the MEC is supposed to be doing. Like I'm saying, even the MEC has got to be informed on what to do and how to do things. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, okay. I think it looks like we are agreeing to a certain extent and making some improvements. Miss, are you here? You have got any contribution to make? You are covered. I'm not talking about the covers or the insurances. Merapus. Oshap. I think you make a new Oshap, I'm sure. Oshap, all right. Good.
Yes, no, I really agree with them, because really, if you know that you are going to lose in that station, you will target the station for this and then stall the process in that investigation, because there are areas you know you are going to lose. And then you send your members and they say, no, we are going to lose here. Yeah? Let us change the process. And really, I mean, that is politics. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I think it needs to be understood as such, and it may create crisis, because if we have opened and a voter is inside the voting station and has marked about 10 ballot papers, but has not thrown any in the box, you can't even take that voter out of the voting station. Legally, that voter is supposed to be in there until expresses his intention. And now, if you have them coming in, and then they've got a right actually to occupy the voting station until you give them a ballot paper that they are satisfied and say, I voted correctly. If it continues to mark it wrongly, you can't evict them from the voting station, because then it denies them the right to vote. So then let us put the mechanism that will tell the world that no, you have given an opportunity. It's adequate now. If you have not done so, then you will never do so. That's all what one is saying, is that we must find that particular limit. And then the lawyers, I think, then they must cut their heads. You understand the political thinking, and then lawyerize it. Okay. Yes, and then... And then you heard the members speaking, as IEC, you have any responses, and then and also speak to another issue that talks to electronic submissions and the possible risk that may be there, and whether there are anything that you are worried about or you are understanding that may need attention. Take us on.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. I would actually invite both the CEO and the deputy to respond to the rest of the questions. We've already focused on that, but may I take this opportunity just to address that very important question that the Chair has brought to the table: the issue of that the rights always go along with responsibility, and we would have failed in our responsibilities not to take into consideration the worst case scenario that has been expressed by the Chair and the honourable members regarding the issue of the spirit of allowing a person a second or a third opportunity to reconsider their cutting of their ballot is actually a well-intended proposition, and it's been there Now, what has come up is that in case of the Westerner, I think we need a meeting of minds between the Commission and the Portfolio Committee. And we've agreed here that we would actually be round robin in the Commission a new proposition that would put a limit. There are two reasons for that. One, the issue of the abuse of the resources, because we procure on the basis of the number of people that are actually registered in that particular voting station. Now, should the worst case scenario arise, it can actually create, one, the resources and availability crisis. Two, a knock-on effect in that it can be an impediment on others' rights to be exercised if their intent is actually to disturb or to destabilize the voting and the electoral process. As such, I think now that this has come up, we are obliged to take into consideration that which could be anticipated. We can be excused for that which could not have been anticipated, but in light of this discussion, we can categorically say the Commission will apply itself, but it does not necessarily have to come back into the legislation. We do have what mechanisms that can deal with the regulations to address specifically that issue and to put the cap in the number of ballots a person is reasonably allowed to have. So on that, I would now hand over to the CEO and the colleagues to take through the rest of the question. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, just before you proceed, I think we would like to be informed on what sort of mechanism. If you resolve that, can it be a thing that we can get it faxed, emailed in the next 3, 4, 5 days? And then if we can just get that one second paper to the committee secretary, then you can just throw in our emails and say, no, this is what the IC thinks to actually deal with your political view. This is how they want to deal with it legislatively. And then, so that we are in comfort, we because this particular matter is, it holds surprises to everybody in the country. While the intent to open is a good one, but also it opens the back door for others. The CEO may proceed.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I have an easier job on this occasion. My colleague will deal with one or two questions. Just to confirm, Honorable Hussein, that what the chairperson has said and what I have said in relation to temporary identification certificate, it is included in the Identification Act, is it? Yeah. That Act, 1997. There's no need to worry about it, and no one will be disenfranchised as a result of that offer. The issue on the definition is one that is a matter of consistency, I'm told, in terms of drafting and the dealing with what those acts the provisions as to this act. But for us it's also an issue that relates to a matter we, as I've indicated, we have extensively engaged with Cooktown. I think at a point when we were here, much earlier when we were talking about the amendments to the act, we did mention to this committee that there was even a thought at that point to have a number of the provisions that are in the Structures Act that relate to managing elections, including the vacancies, perhaps transferred to our act. That cannot happen. But they are dealing with those issues. And I think it is best in the circumstances to tidy them up in that act. So that if we should in future deal with those, then we can easily pop, if that is the word to use, propaganda to the sect. I think to provide for them in both might not be, we were told it's not advisable, and I submit might not be neat at this point in time. Because when they bring that act through their parliamentary processes and we have concluded on our act and they make changes to their act, we will be sitting with a fairly untidy situation, if members would understand and agree with what I say. In respect to the issue of authorized representatives, my colleague is going to deal with the matter. But I did want to make a provision. Member Mo is, we deal with her sometimes when we deal with national elections and provincial elections in another capacity in her party. She will understand that. She is the authorized person because in the elections of the National Assembly, she is the authorized representative. But in the elections of provincial legislatures, she delegates to provincial representatives. She does that. In the elections of municipal elections, she can delegate that server, you know, her municipality, because an entity there is a municipality which has that election. But my colleagues, I will deal with the distinction between the authorized representative for purposes of vacancies in the Structures Act as opposed to purposes of submission of list of candidates for us when you do nominate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CEO and Chairperson. Three things really that I wish to raise at this age. The authorized representative, as the CEO says, can delegate a municipal entity. In other words, there is no expectation that the person who holds the formal authority performs those functions himself throughout the country physically. It's practically impossible. So that definition does not preclude the possibility to delegate people, but that delegation must be on record. The chairperson raised the possibility of the possibility of a transitional arrangement insofar as our bill goes and the structure said. The point of the principle is this. A definition in the Act must relate to the substance of the Act. Now, if we were to add that necessary element as proposed by Cocker, it bears no relationship with the balance of the body of the Act. So it's a definition that hangs in the air and does not speak to the content of the Act. So in that sense, it would be unhelpful. Whereas if you do the same in the Structures Act, because the Structures Act deals with vacancies, how they must be filled, by elections, when they occur, what circumstances lead to by election, and what must happen if there's a by election, then there's a nexus between the definition and the content of the Act. So the point there is that we need to deal with our colleagues in COFCA to ensure that they treat their those amendments expeditiously so that they are on hand in time for the elections. And I think the colleagues from Hokta are here as well in the House, so the sentiment of the committee can be relayed through them as well as through the DG of the department. The issue that the chairperson of the commission raised, that we agree that we got to curb potential abuse of process insofar as the reissuing of ballots goes. Perhaps we need to consider a formulation that says the Commission must prescribe circumstances in which the reissuing of ballots can happen, so that when the Commission regulates that, there is a empowering provision in the Act. And we can work, as the chairman says, we can lawyerize it and send it through to members of the committee to its secretary. So it's something that can happen. And the third issue, Chair, that I wish to raise, on clause 4 of the bill, there's a technical error in that clause. It's on page 4 of the actual bill. Reference is made to section 17A of the Principal Act. It ought to have been section 14A. So I wish to raise that and apologize for that technical error. We wish to place it on the table. I'm done, Chair.
When you are done, I'll see the mic going off. Okay. I thought that you are still consulting, you know, to give us the true facts, not misrepresent.
Okay.
Agreed. Sai is right that it is now section 14A, not 17D. Agreed from the IEC.
Okay.
We'll double check on our side as well, that it makes sense. Electronic submission. Allay our fears.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We have considered this issue, and we must place it on record that there has been a misunderstanding, which we regret. Where we were supposed to come back to the committee and allay your fears earlier than today, we did not. There was no meeting of the minds on that score, and we apologize for the inconvenience and the error on our part. Perhaps I should indicate that the electronic submission, as provided in the bill, is intended to take advantage of the opportunities created by advances in technologies and to improve our political administrative interface. I should point out to this point that in the elections that we are going to hold next year, we are going to be filling vacancies for close to 10,000 councillors. Each one of those, a party contesting those elections, must submit a number of forms manually, as they have done to us, by a certain deadline. It is clear that the deadlines have been very tough and cumbersome at times on parties. And for that reason, after discussing extensively with political parties represented in the PLC or Party Liaison Committee, there was a request for another option in addition to what we have that could facilitate the process. And that's how the idea of an electronic submission was born. This submission is intended to do away with the notion of a single day of candidate nomination. In other words, you know, although once an election has been called or proclaimed in proverbial terms, parties are free to make the submissions. We do find that we receive submissions inevitably on the last day and possibly an hour or two before closing time. And it's massive documents manually submitted And in that process, quite a number of challenges are. This is where we were hoping we will help parties. For them to have a system where they can capture way in advance of the nomination closing day and keep their submission intact with us until the closing time. We accept that the electronic system, and parties do accept that as well, is premised on a user acceptability agreement, which provides that, you know, parties do use that system on the understanding as we have reached with them in relation to the results. And that includes a number of things. The system will be auditable. It is secure. The authorized representative of the party is provided with a secure passcode. Every time they go onto the system, there's an audit trail, and it can be traced. But most importantly, this system would have been audited by I don't know to say licensed is the correct term, but it would be a licensed auditing firm that has provided us with a certificate to say that the system's security is what we have specified it to be, and the system will do what it's meant to do. Those certificates are provided to political parties in addition to them having audited systems through their own audit teams. We accept that an election must happen within a given time frame, and with all of these documents also being provided within those time frames. And for that purpose, it follows that the political contest is really one where we need to optimize the ability of political parties to comply. Hence, we are looking at more ways for them to make submissions where they can. And we need to manage the risks that go with it. The most important thing, Chairperson, that I have to point out to us is that the electronic submission is not a replacement of the manual system that we have at the moment. And I think this is an issue we will make clear to the House to the extent that we can. Both systems will coexist, such that where there is a system failure on the side of a political party or wherever, that a manual process that we have in place will remain and be the system that we have for purposes of submitting. The last thing that I have to point out is that we are quite aware of the both interests but also the risks that this might raise. And in our consultation on this matter, we agreed that in the event that there are issues that arise either from this House or in our consultations with political parties, we will look at those issues, including but not limited to whether both systems should in fact close at the same time, or whether one should close earlier to provide for a safety net in the event that there are challenges that we need to deal with. And lastly, I think provisions in law as we have at the moment appear, to me at least, to be sufficient to deal with issues of objections or any challenges that might arise to the extent that persons may be included or excluded in terms of existing provisions and the election timetable that we provide for this purpose. I just want to be sure that the Chairperson has covered everything that we reflected on as we spoke in a few moments ago.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, indeed, firstly, I think we acknowledge that the advent of technology and its application is something that we need to continuously apply ourselves
and critique it. This is part of that exercise that the commission from its inception has always strived for. We've always maintained that we want to be on the cutting edge, but not on the bleeding edge of technology. So we continue in that particular spirit since the induction of the institution, in consultation with the key stakeholders, that is, through the PSC. This has been a motivated position for us to advance to the House and through the House of Parliament. But in the process also, we remain flexible and open to further inputs so that at the end, all of us would say we have actually applied ourselves and taken into consideration these concerns and any particular loopholes. In this particular case, the issue of risks, let me make an analogy, are like medication. If you open a medication box, you'll always find inside one a disclaimer, two, the side effects. There are side effects to any process that we put on the table, so there's no foolproof. As there may be challenges in terms of submission with electronics, on the side of the commission, without fear of any contradiction, I would put my neck on the block that our systems have withstood the test of time and continue to be subjected to the most robust verification and checks and balances, including independent authorities, both within our national security structures as well as within the industry in terms of the professionals from auditing, auditing firms who are specialists also in the auditing of the IT systems. Interestingly, it was the portfolio that I helped to establish in 1998, and I can still recall that the then Deputy Minister of Intelligence wanting all the assurances that our systems truly are actually robust, and that's when the tradition of looking at the IEC side of things took place. But the concern that on the other side of the fence, within the party political technology or capability, or even the service providers, we cannot guarantee, then that makes that there is a risk. Similarly, in the manual system, a person on the day could find that on the freeway to Pretoria, there's been a car accident, and they can't reach us on by the deadline. So this is an issue that we would appeal to honorable members and ask to say, let us find, put our heads together and find if there are alternatives that could be brought in without being an impediment to the advance of the technology, because certainly the technology would ease even the administrative work that is related to the submissions. And the window of submission is 20 days before the actual closing date. But yes, the dynamics within the political parties may actually also hold back being in a position to submit within that 20 days. But from our side, I think we will satisfy ourselves that we've looked to the best of our ability while remaining open to any alternate suggestion that we still recommend that the PLC's resolution be upheld unless there is further alternate information or mechanism or solution that can mitigate that kind of a worst-case scenario. We did look at, should we actually say the electronic should close 24 hours before, then there was also the other side of the argument that that may be actually attract a different argument in terms of technicality, that we are actually disenfranchising or creating other legal disputes and
to that situation. So as matters stand at the moment, given the information that we have and all that we've considered, if I may just reiterate, we still recommend that the House and the honourable members uphold the PLC's recommendation and the Commission to apply the electronic in addition, not as a substitution, but do flag that there may be those risks, and we will continue to look for how best we could mitigate them now or in the future. But leading to these elections, let the House consider this recommendation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Member Omo, you sit in the PLC.
I used school for many, many years.
Okay.
Many years.
So, will I be correct to say that is the meeting of gentlemen and gentlewomen?
Definitely say. You
but elections itself is a war.
It's a war.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. So I'm just raising that, you know, so that we have a correct contact. And you want to add or subtract?
No, Chair, I don't want to. I just want to confirm something with Mrs. Ngomo. She's very nice in the PLC until election day.
That's exactly what I know. That's why I'm saying that at the level of the PLC, because it's a gentleman's meeting, you know, things may run very smooth, but when the issues of arise during elections, you may not even find her when you phone her to come and interview.
Chairperson, if I just state that I am one person whom over years, because I've been a PLC member from the start of the PLC, right until when I came to the National Parliament, I've always been accessible. But definitely, I'm very kind and humble, right until the last day. I do agree. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Now what I've heard from the IEC, can we have a look at clause 3 then on the amendment? Whether this clause 3 actually talks to exactly what you're communicating. And I do see clause 3 of this amendment. Have you read it now? Clause 3 of the amendment.
Yes.
Try and reach it. The message I'm receiving is that electronic submission is actually an addition. Or more or less, I may not put it correctly, but what is happening on clause 3 B? It starts with electronic submission. And then it says, or then it talks to the hand submission. If you turn them around, and then the sub B becomes the first one and the other one, does it still communicate the same message? Or, as it stands now, does it actually give the spirit that you have about these two methods? Because what I've heard from the chairperson and the CEO, I don't think that the way section 3B under 1A, the A and the B as they stand, they really talk to that. I don't know, but I just want to understand from you, if we start with manual submission and say or then come to electronic submission, is it still the same as it is now? And again, as they are, do they speak to the spirit that you have that says the electronic submission, and then it's actually an additional one? Because as they sit here, they are two distinct methods of submission, and they can operate separate from the other one. No one depends on the other one, the way they're sitting here. And then if we can just get some clarity on that, then yeah.
Chairperson, yes, the spirit that has been articulated by the chairperson is encapsulated in the formulation as it stands. If you transpose 3B, A, and B, you don't lose anything. So we can transpose them in other words, shape. It won't change anything, and we are able to change, in fact.
Honorable members, are we together? The thing that is, I'm trying to get clarity on is that the actual method of submission is manual submission. Now the IEC was introduced electronic submission. Now, with the advent of technology, now the issue that as it stands now is that that clause says the prescribed nomination form must be submitted, then says electronic. Start with that one. Does not start with the manual submission. I mean, just a man on the street would interpret that must submit electronically, otherwise then you can go to the next one if you have got problems. Otherwise, submitting electronically, that's what is expected to be done to everybody. I know legally we may argue differently, but ordinary people on the ground will say you are supposed to submit electronically, but then you have got this other window to submit manually, probably if you have got some other thing. That's why I just wanted to get clarity, because the spirit that they said was that it is physical handover or submission. And then the issue of electronic then is an option that is being put up there for those that are advanced and blah 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 under certain circumstances and conditions, and then a prescription from the regulations or rules, then they can submit to that. That's what I just wanted to see. So that formulation as it is sitting and the order, whether it has got any impact into the interpretation of that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think having a brief consultation with the technical support team, we most welcome the swapping to start with A with B and make it A that must be submitted manually and or electronic. It leaves it, but by that particular date. If you have not met that particular date, that's it. So I think from our point of view, we would, there's no material problem or objection to the chair's, suggestion. And if it would make the honorable members comfortable as well, we certainly can make that change. Thank you, sir.
Okay, so thank you very much. You still want to make some more clarity, sir?
No, it's a sequential issue.
Yeah.
If we agree to that proposition, then we've got to do the same in clause 2, G.
Okay.
Same.
All right. I think the members will talk for that. I was just simply looking at the thing for clarity, for the members to be able to take the correct decision. Honorable Hussein, you had your hand up. You are now covered.
It's fine. I mean, I'm not hung up on it. It doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah, serious life cup. Okay. All right.
Just go
that way. Okay. But I just want to apologize that I'm sure it is the echo. I'm told it is not working. I'm not sure whether it has been deliberately made to malfunction for us not to pay attention to the work that they are having, or it is just a fault somewhere else. But I think we'll quickly finish up and then. Okay. Now I think we have dealt with this thing. We must have a clean document now that talks to this thing. And as I've said, that we need to get this thing as quick as possible out of the committee. And then a possibility is that we may convene a special meeting before Tuesday next week. Otherwise, if everything goes west, is that on Tuesday, then we must agree on this thing. Next week, Tuesday. We must agree on this thing. But there is a possibility that we can get everything together. And then Thursday, Friday morning, because in any way we had a scheduled meeting this Friday, we may use it in the early hours of Friday, in the first 2 hours, and just get this thing off the table. Or whether we negotiate some earlier date over lunchtime. Because there's nothing that we are actually disagreeing, just simply tying up certain things, and that is finished. And maybe I'm seeing the person, I'm not sure whether it's raising your hand.
Yeah, it's because I have a hand up here. I apologize for interrupting you. But now, I just want to have a look. Now that we've tried to change the A, the B to an A and the B in the electronic part to B, to be a B, what about there on top on the issue of me? You're not talking about the party now, to submit 13% to subsection 1, the electronic party. I will also swap it also there on top. Say, yeah.
Subsection 1.
Yeah. Well, 1A.
Under 2,
yes.
Yeah, I think we have spoken to that. That is a consequential amendment. We are talking under 3, and then we are saying also that one under 2.
Also,
then
yeah.
We'll start for
yeah.
Yes.
Thank you
very much. There was a hand this side.
Through you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, may I indulge in light of the Chair's indication and also with the backdrop of the process without compromising was intended to expedite the amendment in the bill. And while the rest of the team and the committee is sitting, we had hoped that today the chair would actually go through clause by clause, play for those areas that we now need to revert back with the rephrasing, but approve, and then only be left with the sweeping at the earliest convenient time for the committee, either on Friday or next Tuesday. But from our side, we had hoped, Honourable Chair, that we would actually go through clause by clause and have the amendment and everything ratified. Thank you, Chair.
Well, we may attempt to do that. We may attempt to do that because ordinarily we are not at war with each other on this specific document, except that we'd have loved to have a cleaner document and for us to say okay, and then agree, and then we issue a resolution of the committee. You can come in and assist us.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Chair, just as the parliamentary legal advisor, I have a concern with expediting the bill. But with just with the A list and no draft B bill to really present to the members, that is a risk because members will be voting on something that we can't necessarily put the wording to members. And for that then to get a reflection in a report that goes to our house, the risk of running with this instead of sitting on Friday and getting to the end, exiting itself and the bill being withdrawn, delayed further, then maybe just allowing for one day for a proper A-list and a draft B-bill to be cleaned up, that can send to members, with permission of the committee, then Chair indicates having a Friday morning early sitting and then getting the bill in the house next week with permission of the NA. I'm just afraid if we now... If we assist the committee in doing things almost in theory, and saying that it looks like women would be like this, and it looks like the ALS may look like this, and the people will reflect this. It's a big risk, especially when the committee takes a deliberate decision on every clause and needs to apply, because it's basically signing off on a report that lines have been applied and wording has been approved. I would like to highlight that risk to the committee itself. Thank you, Chair.
Well, the intention is that we want to get this particular bill out of our hands next week Tuesday. It must be out of our hands, and then so that it can start finding its way to the NCOP for concurrence or whatever. But what happens in between, I think we will try to expedite and I'm not sure whether then that the machine.
No, Honourable Chair, I think we fully appreciate the the input that has been made. Save all that from our side, we had if one is to phrase it differently. Other than those other clauses that we've already gone through, and we are going to make any changes, are there any other from the committee concerns with what you draft? And then we can then leave it to the to the committee to do as advice. From our side, if there were any other matters, then we can deal with them now. But the actual formal passing of the resolution would take place when we bring back a clean document with all the considerations having been factored. That was the context there. But no, we are happy to wait for that particular process today. Thank you.
Okay. Look, I think what we are agreeing is that the authorized representative, then we're saying that you have said that no, it goes to, it will be better dealt with in the Municipal Structure Act, which is not a problem. Then the issue of the identity document, the temporary certificate, it said no, it's discovered. I think that's what members have heard. And then the issue of the ballot paper, then we have heard you. You have said that you will find a way of dealing with it in the rules, regulations, and whatever. But we are giving you an opportunity. If there is any need of adding certain ways in the act, that will help you to do that. Remember that you can't make rules for a provision in the act that does not empower you to make rules. The act must empower you to make the rules or to prescribe a particular process. But if the provision in the act does not empower you to do that, then those rules or regulations, then they are not applicable in principle. They have been done illegally. So the question is to look on this specific one of the reissuing of a ballot in the voting station. Then why you will be putting it in the regulations, but empower yourself in the act to be able to do that. And then what is there that you think you can add here that is adequate to cover you to make the relevant rules to implement that? And then we giving you that specific opportunity. That's why we say let's have some of these things within 2-3 days, whether in one page or whatever, so that when the members clean this and then say, okay, and then they are clear that it's a clear piece of legislation. And so then the other one, of course, is that it is the just the swapping of those, then the B becomes an A and the A becomes a B under Section 2 and Section 3. And other than that, of course, is the question of the amendments that have been made by the other stakeholders, where under Section 5, and then whether when we put them, because remember that they just recommended what you must insert. The question is, should we insert them as they are? The principle, what is being contained the content of that amendment and their proposed insertion, you are agreeing with it in terms of message, but in terms of the drafting, you agree with the draft exactly as it is. And then doesn't it open any other thing? We don't know. And then, but I get up saying is with the members, when you have now that particular clean and then those being inserted, then you should be able to speak to this different thing. No, there must be a full stop here. You must not add those three ways. Then they are bringing some sort of confusion and whatever, you know. So those kind of things. I think those are the amendments. I don't think there is any other amendment outside that will be brought into the into the document. Honourable members, what do I do with this bill? Come again?
Clean
it up, and then you come and talk to it. Then we'll strive to have to negotiate a meeting for Thursday, otherwise Friday. Yes, we'll negotiate for a meeting on Thursday, otherwise it will be Friday. Yes, but if it is on a Thursday, it depends how we'll get permission. Then we'll communicate to members on this specific one. Can we take it again, honorable member? Agreed. So thank you very much, and then... I know that you will not like Friday, but you see, you must remember that there are institutional arrangements in Parliament, how the committee should function, for certain committees to happen on a particular day and open space for other committees to happen. And now we are encroaching into an area that belongs to other committees, and then and caucuses, mind you. You remember that you have never missed your caucus, the DA caucus. Yes, that's why I'm saying that there is that particular possibility. That's what we are trying to target for the lunch time, and then to come and clean and say on sharp sharp. But we'll try to avoid Friday as much as is possible. But if it is not possible, members must just agree that Friday morning is going to be an hour and a half job, and then we're gone out of this area if it happens. Unless if you think that now, next week, Tuesday, then you can see for all the three activities that must happen to actually get this agreed. Yes.
Yes, my difficulty is that, my Fridays are booked weeks in advance. It's very difficult for me to be able to make adjustments. So I'm happy if we have to meet after the house sitting, if we have to either tomorrow or Thursday. Or even during the lunch breaks, or even earlier than usual. If it's at 7 o'clock in the morning, that's also fine.
All right. I think all of us, even though that Friday is a normal working day, you see, all of us, I think, we have a little bit of butterflies about Friday. We do have that message, and we all have it. And but as I guess I'm saying, that we'll struggle against the big wind to... Yes. Okay. So we'll struggle for a Thursday last time, and if it is impossible, then we'll communicate appropriately.
Chairperson, I just wanted to make a humble request. I hope that our next meeting will not be held in this room here because of aircons and all, and would like to recommend to you, sir, that if they give us this room, just allow them to put us under one of the trees out here.
Yes.
As long as they can move all these recording things, we don't like, but not in here.
No, thank you very much. We have that message.
Sorry,
and I'm sure you can see that there is a little water running down my face. And remember that you may not be knowing that I was half dead last week. And but you're recovering bit by bit. And then... Okay, so I think that is agreement. We will try and struggle for a meeting on Thursday during last time. Honourable members, the other thing is the PRR report. And ordinarily the PRR report is almost a combination of a quarterly report. Or maybe I should say that to the IEC officials so that they can quickly get those love letters of us quickly, then they should be released, I think. Yes, you can be released. But you are allowed to deal in the imping here, to hear what you're saying in the DRR report about the IEC. Yes, and then But as a backwards, the IEC was indeed with the challenges that the AG has made noise about. That's what they are saying to IEC. Even the Auditor General's report, and we should not come back here next year with the same topic. Thank you very much. Adam, and just spent a lot of some time with observations or whatever, and recommendations. But I think the honorable members have got the capacity to read themselves. They should have read them long ago.
Okay, so yes. In the interest of time,
yes.
I'm not going to go through the entire table. A lot of the report is basically mandatory requirements, things that we're supposed to do. So it defines, the introduction defines what we're supposed to do, what our role is, and we know our roles, and then basically defining the programs of the department. Oh, sorry, I need to put it up. Then also just the department priorities, again, which you'll be fairly familiar with, but just to summarize in the supplement, their three main strategic goals and their individual strategic objectives. So again, I'm not going to go into detail. The role that the department plays in relation to the NDP, which they've briefed us on several times. The key challenges raised by the DHA, they were kind of recently told us when they were telling us about the annual report. The ministerial priorities, I think I'll just summarize there. For instance, the establishing of an effective DMA and upgrading of ports of entry, improved client experience through the Mwanzi project. The annual performance plan, we dealt with at the beginning of the year, basically just a summary of how the priorities have changed. They're slightly less targets. And then also looking at the success rate of meeting of targets is. This is a look at the quarterly expenditure. We didn't deal with quarter one specifically. By the department, we have the fourth quarter expenditure from last year. We also got the provincial managers, and they all briefed us on their quarterly expenditure. And they're generally in line, otherwise with good reason for not being in line with the quarterly expenditure targets. Financial statements, DHS are improving on its performance, indicating that they're also getting self-funding and sorting out the issues of financing themselves and Zerko. And then just a summary of each of the programs, how many targets were succeeded and how much was spent. Basically just providing an overview in the report what we've learned during the year. So I'm going to repeat again what the department has said. The issues specifically raised in the annual report and by the AG were issues of unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. All of which are areas in which there have been significant improvements, but also like ongoing challenges, largely to do with uncondoned amounts from previous years. So this is an overview of the AG's presentation to us, which we also dealt with fairly recently, so I'm not going to go into the exact details there. But suffice to say that all the recommendations emanate out of all of these things we learned during the year. The human resources then, again, is an overview of their capacity, their employment equity. Then we also considered various other sorts of information which we're required to do, which is the state of the nation address, the priorities, our oversight trips and recommendations to Gauteng and the Northern Cape. We didn't include the joint oversight because that's not the report that hasn't been adopted yet. We also looked, we also did our budget vote for it at the beginning of the year, looking at the budget of the department and its changes and recommendations from previous years. Then we also dealt with, obviously, with the Electoral Commission, as we've done now, but their annual reports indicating progress that they've made, and obviously the government printing works also doing very well with its 15 audits. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts actually met with Home Affairs, something we're also required to consider, about the previous year, 2013-14. The resolution of that report has not been tabled yet. It's somewhere in limbo, so we are not able to actually include the scope of report. But the Department of Home Affairs indicated in their annual report what SCOPA had told them to do and that they were seeking to address them. There's a number of intentions that they've undertaken already that are listed there. The findings then, again, are what emanates out of these various oversight activities. The way it's structured, the findings and the recommendations are basically just restatements of the same kind of thing. So rather than deal with the findings, I'm going to go directly to the recommendations, which are basically just restatements of those findings as statements to the Minister and the Electoral Commission and the Government Printing Works to affect those concerns and those findings. So the recommendations that we have based on these intentions throughout the year for the Department of Home Affairs were to address the overdue audit findings, to encourage, so we're on page 22 now, to encourage programs and initiatives in order to reduce tensions between locals and foreigners, expand awareness by the public of the closing of current late registrations of birth in December 2015, and ensure that all staff are trained in time to deal with the more stringent measures being introduced. Report before the end of 2015-16 on progress made on arrangements to source alternative network providers to CETA. 8.1.5, ensure stringent enforcement of standard operating procedures to improve recording of performance information, which is also something that the AD raised. Ensure that all provincial managers are permanently employed. Report on coordination and collaboration with other government departments in preparing for the rollout of the border management agency by the end of the first quarter of 2016-17. Consider creating or looking for a new headquarters for the DHA with adequate accommodation for staff and the ministry, and to ensure that improvements and signage are made to the current building for to better accommodate staff in the interim. Ensure that computers at refugee reception centres are upgraded as a matter of urgency. Ensure that the room at the Lindela Repatriation Centre have an additional toilet and shower for deportees, and continue to make offices available to the SAR, the Human Rights Commission. Consider the need to address human resource, particularly in the Cape, where we noted shortages of staff. Employ the required number of inspectors at all ports of entry. 13, with regard to visa requirements, update the Committee on Progress of the INC. We've heard in the news what's happened there. They haven't specifically agreed to that yet, but the progress is being shown there. And establish visa facilitation services for travellers in South Africa as required, which is also part of the recommendations of the INC. The Minister of Finance, we make specific recommendations to where it's not the responsibility of Home Affairs, to increase the funding for Home Affairs, prioritize the completion of its IT system modernization program, which is pretty much underlying all of its issues, encouraging continued support for that program. The government printing works should continue with arrangements that allow flexibility to employ specifically skilled staff, which we will also be dealing with assisting in terms of legislation that's coming. The Electoral Commission should address the findings of the AG. Secondly, alternative and more proactive measures are needed to ensure broader awareness of registration and actual voter registration. The IEC should prepare a status report of voter registration during the first quarter of 2016 and report to Parliament. So that, in a nutshell, very quickly, is the Garrard of this report. I'll just quickly.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And it is just a little bit unfortunate that some of the reports that we have already adopted, oversight to Gauteng, oversight to Northern Cape, I think that is supposed to be coming this week. It looks like it has been shelved again. And then there are resolutions that are taken that are included here. Exactly similar resolutions. I'm not sure how we want us to deal with that, but it is fine. It's a repetition
is not a crisis on its own. It's just simply the time of responding back on those recommendations. And then get extended. It's a difficult extension. Even early this year when we spoke about the oversight of Gauteng, then we have spoken about the computers at Maraba Start and the rest, that they must actually get them sorted out. If we say it today, what is the implication on the response of the department? If they respond to this one or the previous one, then the sequence and then the timing then starts being problematic. That's why I said it's ordinarily the BRR report is almost like a culmination of the quarterly report up to the end. And but there you are, honorable members. I think much of what is left of us is to go to the House, and if we have an opportunity of debating it or declarations, then we must make the most noise about the things that must be sorted out. But make the most noise about the things that need to be sorted out, whether it is actually written in here in this report or not. As long as it's relevant to Home Affairs for the betterment of their services, the members should be able to sit in that House and make that relevant noise. And yeah, just before I go page by page, and then Honorable Hussein.
If you're going to go page by page, I don't know where now is the time to raise it, but I see this on the recommendations and in the entire document, no way to recover anything around the smart ID. I don't see it.
Okay, I think you'll have the opportunity to raise it. And then that's for us to be able to agree to the report or to amend whatever we want to amend, as long as we agree on the amendment. But like as I'm saying is that we have got many reports that have actually got resolutions that the minute the report of the resolution goes to the House is adopted, then it becomes a parliamentary or a National Assembly resolution. And it stands as such, and the speaker is bound, the office of the speaker is bound then to communicate those resolutions to the relevant authority or department and expect a response or performance on those. And so that's the situation we are having. On page one, honorable members, or let me just ask this report, when did you receive it? Did you receive it this morning? Oh, you received it last Friday. So, we have read. When did you receive it? I can't hear you, Chair.
Chair, I should say I just received it now. I didn't receive it on my email. There is a problem with my email address.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I'm going to
say. It's a personal problem. Oh, okay. You got it in time. Sometimes last week. Okay, then I've got a right then to ask whether members, whether they are actually heard about page one. Look, because I mean, one thing for sure is that we definitely have to rely on the office of the secretary as well as the content advisor to assist us in putting together the report. And ordinarily, they may not put sentences exactly the way you would like to put a sentence. And then we should just talk to the spirit and content of what is it that is being communicated. And then probably it may assist us moving forward. And then, but where you think that what is the message you want to communicate is a little bit late, not clear, or confusing, or not relevant, then we should be able to raise that. The page one, is there anything that we need to speak to? It's just an introduction and some of the basic things that actually is why we're doing what we are doing. That is on the introduction. And then, I'm being distracted heavily by the unauthorized distraction. Yeah. And then we, page two, then just simply speaking to the progress of the Department of Home Affairs, and actually what it is in the strategic documents of the Home Affairs. Nothing of that process, it's just what the president has expected from them to do. Their mandate, actually. Nothing. Page 3. And then it's what is reference to the Lethal Development Plan. And then the key challenges faced by the Department of Home Affairs. This is what they told us. This is what they told us. And then at the bottom is ministerial priorities to address the challenges. I think we can look at the box at the bottom. I mean, reasonably covered. The issue that the Honorable Hussein is worried about, and then together with me, the clients, improved client experience, right at the bottom on page 4, in the table.
Yeah,
that's what I'm just saying. Then we have got the analysis now of the annual performance plan of the DHA. This is just to state effects. Then we have got the section 32 expenditure report. Are we happy? On page 5. These are just facts, I think, that we have just recorded. And then page 6, also, then we go to page 7, but I just want to request Adam and Eddie to ensure that where we have got figures, must make sure that the figures are correct, extracted, exactly out of the program. As they are. We must not try and move commas and put them where we want to move. We must just put the commas or full stop where it is in the original report. You've seen that just now from the amendment bill. You talk about section 17A instead of 14A. You see. And on page 8, a lot of numbers there, page 8, and then financial statement, unauthorized expenditure, there's a report to that, the regular expenditure, there's a report to that, as well as figures, and then the relevant, and then also the talk to SCOPA. Then you've got fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it's 58,000. Yeah. No matter how small it is, but it must be dealt with. And then we have got the Auditor General's report. The report talks to it. And it talks to the audit opinion. Then on page 10, then it is just simply a footprint of the audit opinion, 2009. To 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, so is that there is an improvement, but it's not an improvement that we can celebrate, it's an improvement that we can encourage them to move a little bit up. Then we go to page 12, then it is consideration of other reports. Sources of information, of course, is our oversight to Gauteng, to Northern Cape, and the State of the Nation Affairs, and then the Electoral Commission and the government printing works, and then the other thing. And we really don't have progress. Should we then go to the observations? McKenna? I think I'll see a page number.
Page 15. Yeah.
Okay.
That where that talks to South Korea to make an office and an open position every set available for the South African Human Rights Commission. I think there, you said, there is no electrification in that office. Therefore, they must plug it to there. I don't know, because I don't see, it is incomplete to me. I said it, that talks to bullet 3. At the stops there on the South African Human Rights Commission. I thought that there must be an addition that talks to ensure the electrification so that to be able to be inserted. I don't know whether we must carry it on the recommendations. Because also, that was also our finding that office has got no plugs for insertion of equipment, electrical equipment.
Okay.
And we get that so that we can have that as a recommendation also.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yes?
Yeah.
No. You see, the one thing is an office accommodation is provided to the human rights. And then they must take the office. And when they take the office, then they must put furniture of their own, they must put equipment of their own inside and the rest. And then, the question of a plug, of course it is a requirement, but I think it's a technical matter. It's a technical matter, really, and of course if you've made an office available, then whatever, whether it's an air conditioner, a knock on the door that is locking or not locking, but we really worried about that. We worried about them to be provided with an office space for them to be able to work. And then other things like the door is not closing properly, then they can speak among themselves and technically with whatever is the carpenters and the rest and the technicians to make sure that there is electricity in there. And if you want to put it in here, yes, make any. If it's just to say to make a suitable office available, then I think it will actually cover all those other things. Can we do it that way? Yes. Do you see where you are? We are going to insert that. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. But anyway, the resolutions in relation to Ngayala, remember that they are contained in the Housing Oversight Report. We have already adopted them. And then 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, we start with the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission, of course, is the major one, of course, is that issue of the Auditor General as well. But I just think that we just need to make sure that with the IEC, the question of voter education, I think we'll just find some space where it is actually talked to. Because voter education is every local government election happens 5 years later. Then you've got five annual generations that comes in to vote for the first time for local government elections. And therefore, the continuous voter education then cannot be overemphasized. Okay, and 20, right, let's go to key findings. I think Adam has actually read all of them for us. Is there anyone that we think we need to modify
on page 21. On page 21, under 7.1, are we happy? Okay.
121, should I say? 7.1.
I wanted you under 7.1 first.
7.1.
711, 712, 713, 714. Are you happy about that?
I thought you were talking about the
whole picture. Yeah, on this funding, I just wanted to go in terms of the key funding. Let's go to 7.2 then, Department of Home Affairs. Raise the one that you want to raise.
Thank you. On 7.21.
Yeah.
That talks to the disclaimer to the station. The sentence reads as follows: the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs welcomes an improvement in the order opinion of the petition from a disclaimer to a qualification. I don't know, can we have something that talks to striving for it? Because to welcome a disclaimer to a qualification, as if qualification is the answer, why don't we have something that talks to strive for unqualified audit opinion? Before we say, however, the committee believes that the MOU between the court will assist in the government. Can we have something to add? Not just to finish by saying, welcome to the improvement of a disabled qualification. Not just telling that they are supposed to have not required, not qualified, because we can't say qualified is welcome. I don't know, but that's what
I think. I thought that what was being welcomed here is a move from disclaimer to qualification.
That's improvement.
If you want us to cast it differently.
But to my understanding, it doesn't make a distinction when we don't add that something that talks to a qualification, but
yeah,
to strive for unqualified report. So that we can also as much as welcome the move, but at the same time, I don't know. Maybe.
Do you understand what Mark Henry is saying?
Yes.
You agree with what he's saying?
Yeah.
But I can't see it myself. Remember that I can't hear the back.
Yeah.
Because
so
my unit here is the agent actually killed it. what I'm saying, Adam?
What this said is the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs welcomes the improvements in the audit from disclaimer to qualification, but encourages striving towards a clean audit, and the committee believes the MOU between the DHA and instead of however I'll say and, the committee believes that the MOU between DHA and DOCA will assist in resolving this matter.
No. We must juggle around that last piece of sentence.
Okay. I'll do it again.
That is, I believe that the MOU between the DHA and the DERCO
instead of believe
because you see, it is not this MOU that's going to take us to clean audit. But if we say not to resolving the matter, that means the matter is the clean audit. Then I think we must just do something about the last few words. That doesn't have an unintended impact. Yes.
Chair, I just say I agree. I think you should put a full stop here, but that point that Adam has added there is a significant point, although it's not the only thing that contributes towards
it.
As there's a separate bullet point which says the committee believes that the MOU is the DHA and DERCO will assist in strengthening or
improving whatever, yes. Not resolving it. Does it make sense? Yes. Yes. Maybe contribute, yes.
No, it didn't make sense in the terms of the person that will respond to it.
Yeah.
They won't miss the point of the MOU.
Mm. Okay.
But I think it's correct overall.
Is it captured, Adam? Okay. Thank you very much, and McCain. Any other points on this 7.2? I think we must just add certain words on it, because it is not a, it's not crime to have an acting provincial manager. It's not crime. The only problem is when it's for a longer time, unreasonable longer time. I think we must just add that, because otherwise it will look like it is taboo to have an acting provincial manager, and which is not correct. 7.25. We agree, Adam? Yeah. Okay. And then on page 22, still under 7.2, is there anything that we... What are we trying to say there? Adam?
There are other things in this report that they still have to come back on, but if they...
Yeah.
So why you don't want to include that, what I'm suggesting, would you include others? That's the first thing. The second thing is this information that came to the committee, whether it needs to still be verified or not, is a separate issue. But that was information that came to the committee where he said very clearly that there was that breach in the security of the smart ID, and he explained in the detail how the syndicates have managed to infiltrate the system. He explained it. In fact, he was responding to a question you asked on page 51. I don't know if you've heard the recording. If you go back to the recording and listen to it carefully, he was responding to a question that you asked about page 51 and 52 around corruption, and then he went on to explain how the cases of smart ID and how the criminal infiltrated the system, and that they were able to recall 60 cases, and he referred that to the counter-corruption unit. He explained all of that in the detail. So the point I'm trying to make is that this was information that was brought to the committee's attention, and it was an observation. So, I mean, it's not something we are making up. He brought it here. And then they can come back with another report. That's fine.
I agree that that's what has been said. And then, you see, the other technicality, Honorable Vane, is that when you put it as an observation, the direct consequence of that is that you must put a recommendation. Yes, and then when you put a recommendation, then the question is, should they still come and talk to us on that particular matter? Because the aim was that if they come there and speak to us, and then they said what they have said, then we'll be able to take our appropriate recommendations that we'll then recommend to be done. At the moment, it will be just simply a fluffy recommendation.
I don't have
a problem of putting it in. What I'm saying is that when we put in, then we must put in a relevant recommendation that deals with us. And then it undermines now the other resolution that we wanted them to come back and speak to us, so that then we take an appropriate. Where do you want to put it in? And then if you could just assist us with Adam, how we want to craft it, so that we know exactly what we're talking about.
Chair, I think as Adam has put it there, that is on its own recommendation.
Yeah.
So we can put that in the recommendation.
How does it read? Because I can't see it.
Yeah.
And where is it on my page 22?
The DHA needs to investigate the possibility of security breaches in the smart ID card application process, particularly counting problems. So
no, it can't be there. It can't be there because that is a recommendation. We are on the findings. Then in the finding, then you have just to speak to the information that there is a possibility that the smart ID card process can be interfered with or whatever. But remember that we should not communicate to the public that there is a possibility of reading the smart ID card, because it is not there. And then, so we mustn't find ourselves communicating unconsciously and undermine the smart ID card integrity. That's why I would have preferred that we haven't engaged that, because we may sense a lot of doubts, and then whereas we have not yet reached the deeper end of it, of that discussion.
No, the thing is in the public domain already.
Yeah?
I mean, the statement's in the public domain already. In fact, it's the department that put it in the public domain, not us.
Yeah.
So everything that's said here...
No, hang on,
let me finish, please. When you're speaking, I leave you to listen.
Yes.
So please, second me a chance. It's not us who put this information in the public domain. It's the department that put it in. So this is an observation. This is what they brought to us. We didn't make this thing up. So all I'm asking is for what they have said to be put in there, as they have said it, in the shortest way possible. And for us as a committee to say, our recommendation is we'll investigate. We don't know all of the facts. Let them come back to us. Whether he was misunderstood or whatever, I don't know. But this is what they said. That must be there in that report, and the recommendation can be go and investigate and come back to us and tell us whether this thing is solid.
Okay, good.
I don't know. Can you help Bell send a copy of minutes of that meeting and see how we reported that? And perhaps take that question. But I don't know whether we have passed those minutes.
No. Because of the, remember that we are, if we read this document, it's a BRR report. And when we have not actually talked to the matter seriously, it has been said by the provincial manager, and then there is an accounting office at the department that must be interrogated on the particular matter. They must actually carry brief us. Then they must agree that that is possible, that is what is happening, or not. And then they are able to take a position and say, you know, under the circumstances, do X, Y, Z. But I mean, if we just go now and put it in, that means we recognize that it is correct. And then we want the department then to go and investigate. And the department comes here and says, no, this thing doesn't. That man misunderstood what or misconstrued what was happening and then did not understand. Because, I mean, it's at the provincial level. And then the smart ID that is done at the national level and being distributed down. And again, that is not the ultimate accountable person. And then it's a functional of the DG. And you'll remember that last time as well. Honorable Fuchland had a similar experience. Somebody said it. Similar thing. But then when you try and inquire with the head office, then they investigate, they wouldn't find anything. So I wouldn't like us to find running ahead. And then you find that when we go deep into the thing, then the issues are unfounded. Because that will undermine us that we are not interrogating, we are not doing appropriate oversight. Because that man has actually just empowered us to ask the DG. And these DDGs now, it's a tough question when we meet them. And only when they confirm, or then they are wishy-washy, and then we take actions. That's what I would have prepared us to do, to actually with the engagement with the department. And we take this thing further, as we have requested them. Because if you remember that meeting, we told them, don't talk in tongues. The deputy minister was saying something else. The DG was saying something else. And I said, don't do that. Go back and deal with your internal problems. But talk to that matter because it has been said to us in public here. Talk to me and then come and tell us what is the story. So I would have preferred us to actually handle it that way rather than actually putting it in the document here. You find that when we are asked what are the issues there, then we say no, we're still waiting for the department. It won't reflect good on us. But the government, and then can you proceed and then please, then you say.
Yeah, in fact, through you, Chairperson, I think the first point, a possibility cannot be a finding. A possibility is a possibility. And then, if perhaps we have to go to edit, it can be around the statements under the heading holding manager stated that this is a possibility of whatever, but inside, not in the recommendations, or not in the findings. The one is it is in the findings, and it's a possibility, really, you can't find the findings. It's either it is, or it is not. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I propose that we don't put that statement in our court until we get a proper response from the department to avoid.
Okay. Can we do that question, Honorable Hussein? We never miss that
minutes, we're going to stand in front of us, and then we ask the difficult questions. And then they will have to tell us, where does that provincial manager get the story? If they come with a different story, and they must explain them that problem. Because me and you, we don't want any situation where the processes of producing the smart ID is undermined, and people have hands in that particular process. We don't want that. We want it to be secured, seriously secure. But also on one side is that we shouldn't raise ears out there that we are actually agreeing with the provincial manager that there is a possibility of doing that when we have actually not really gone down to establish that those facts. Yes.
Okay, let me tell you why I disagree with you.
Yes.
You refer to the word oversight as in when it suits, and that's wrong. This is information that came here, and if you're genuinely interested in trying to prevent this thing from getting out of hand, as a committee you want to show that you're taking this thing seriously. Not to try and pretend as if this thing never happened or that it's not a problem, it is a serious problem. And putting a single sentence is not going to in any way whatsoever going to bring a whole system into jeopardy or in fact it will have the complete opposite effect. Because if we don't make an issue about it, then the officials in the department won't take the necessary steps to close the loophole. In your own words, you said in that committee also, so this smart ID is not as secure as we thought. Those are the words you said in that committee. Go listen to that recording. So this is a significant matter that came before that committee. We all heard what he said, and now we want to pretend as if it never happened. I'm sorry, I can't do that.
No.
So, if you don't want to put it into the report, giving me a good reason why you don't want it. You suggest that the matter is still being dealt with. Well, there are a number of other issues that are still being dealt with, but it's in the report.
It's a very weak excuse
to use.
In any event,
if you choose not to put it in, then I won't report the report because you refuse it. And I'll make a noise in-house on this issue. That will have a worse outcome. So I'm asking your cooperation. Include in here what we observed and what we saw. I appreciate Honorable Gomez's approach to try and include it in the document, even if you choose not to include it as a finding. I understand it may not be a finding. But it's information that was brought to the committee of significance. And I think we will feel if we don't make note of it in that report.
No, you see, we said if you bring it in the body of the report, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. That's why I'm saying is if you put it on a finding, then the direct consequence is that must put a recommendation. And then we have got a couple of steps that we have agreed with them. That must still come and speak to us. You see? But I mean, if you just put a sentence in the body of the report on one of the oversized activities with the department, if Adam finds the relevant area, it's not a problem to me. Yes, but I'm saying we should not put it as a finding because it will force us to draft a recommendation, and whereas we are still having some process that we must follow to actually be able to get to that kind of a situation. Okay. Where do you think Adam is a good is that last provincial manager said blah blah blah?
Well, we raised the issue of
because it was on all the engagement with provincial managers.
Yeah, I'm on page five.
Okay.
stick it in there on the bottom of page 5. Then you just simply stress is make sure that you make reference to the provincial manager of Gauteng. Said 1, 2, 3. And then, of course, that you can indicate that the authorities are waiting a report on that. Or just leave it in one sentence as is.
Can I read that one
after
this? Yeah. Given that he was concerned about the Gauteng provincial manager identifying the possibility of presuming
Okay. It's fine. Are we agreed? Good. Can we okay, no, it's fine. But there is nothing that stops you to make noise in the house. Never think that we are intimidated by that. I'm not intimidated by that. You can make the most noise in the house. That's what you are employed for. Justify your salary. Just like anybody else that makes noise in the house. I wouldn't have a problem. I would never try to stop you from doing that in the house.
We prefer to cooperate here. So avoid unnecessary debate in the house. So
if you say we use you and who?
No, me and my colleagues.
Oh, you and Putin. Okay.
So we would prefer to always cooperate with you. That's always the first option. And if you cooperate with us, and we cooperate with you, then we have no problem.
But the cooperation must be reasonable. You see, it must not be the method that you put one, I must put two, you put three, I must put four. Sometimes when you have to put your four, then I must ask you why you're putting the four. You must convince me why you put the four. And then if I refuse, then because I'm not convinced, you must allow me not to agree with you. Yes, it must not be the same with cooperation. The justice say no. I cooperated with you yesterday, and today you are not cooperating with me. Even when I put in an unreasonable thing in front of me, it can't happen. No, I've done it many times. I don't want to prove it beyond now. I can prove it beyond reasonable doubt. Okay, then now with 7.3 government sitting where? They received a clean audit, and there's no harms about that, and they're striving to secure more work from African states to print their enabling documents. I think you do not need to give reason. He's striving to secure more work from African states. Finish, full stop, end. You see? Because they can print all sorts of documents, and then the e-gazette is being introduced, fine. There was a challenge in retaining there is a challenge. Then the local commission, and then we've got the voter registration. And then the committee knows that the Riverside Office Parklist was still the subject of legal proceeding. It's fine. But the question of voter education, how do we craft it there?
The craft is better in the
recommendation. I think that we did really quit that you know, the IEC should proactively even find electronically. I think that's what was said by Uday on electronic contact with voters and all that.
Innovative.
Yes, innovative means of voter registration and voter education. You can just add that. And yes. Yes. You see? Then that would empower us on the recommendation then to ask them to actually proactively make strides to ensure voter education happens and also maximize voter registration. So we can go to page 23 now on the recommendations. Is there any recommendation that any member is not happy about, or a recommendation that is missing that you want it to be included? Make it.
Question on 811. Address over to all 45. Can we say that sentence that is there maybe? We have misplaced it on the findings on 712. page 21.
On 7?
712. On page 21. On the key findings.
I think there is a little bit of a confusion because what is on 712? It is actually a recommendation, it's not a finding.
Yes, not a finding, it's a recommendation.
The redraft is the other.
Ensure that the JA 7.1.2 is a recommendation instead of a finding. Then it can be 811.
These are recommendations in the previous DRR report. These are recommendations, they're not necessarily finding.
Oh.
It is just findings in terms of recommendations that are still not yet attended to. Okay. So it's just simply reiterate that. Okay. All right.
On 812 also.
And then
812.
Let me just look at them. Have you rewritten them, Adam? All of them. These outstanding recommendations. 711 to 714. Under recommendations, under 8.1. Yes. But on the current recommendations, how are you actually incorporating them? You have restated them individually, or shouldn't we have a recommendation that indicates that they're still recommending that these be addressed, and then make the correct reference to them, rather than still rewriting them individually?
So when I say 811 there,
yes, and then I think you can write the item numbers of those resolutions, because in the previous DRR report, they are not under 7.1.1, but then now we must go to that DRR report and update those numbers. And then the outstanding recommendations in the previous. Yes. Okay. And then because I'm seeing 812. It's still the same as the one on 712. Honourable members,
So that's what I was saying, that in 8.12 can also go to 713. Also to change the term that talks to and foreigners to foreign nationals.
But what we're trying to do now is that we are collapsing them into one recommendation that makes reference to the previous recommendation in the previous DRR report, because they are outstanding recommendations that have not been implemented. So it's going to craft a recommendation that talks to that particular report, that we are still talking this one, are still saying there are things in the previous DRR report that we have recommended to you, you have not attended to, and we want you to attend to them. And then that will take us now to which recommendation as the first one. That is not part of that. Okay, 813 now would be in our new 812. Yes. We start there. Okay? We are speaking to the late registration of birth, as a recommendation there. We have it.
Yes.
And then
And then 8181, the current 814, I think the number will change now. The current 814, and then we seek into alternative source of alternative networks and seizure, because they're crying about seizure. Yes, for them to report on progress on this particular matter. And then 815 ensures stringent enforcement of standard operating procedure to improve recording of performance information. Because I think that was the AGU was worried about, that they don't really have information in certain areas for them to be able to. And then 816 ensures that all provincial managers are permanently employed. I think this one must be draft. Yeah? Yeah, they must try. If you say they must ensure, that means even where they can't do it, then they must do it. Yes. But if you say ensure, and then that all provincial managers are permanently employed, the question of course is that these things take a particular process, and what are the things that are preventing them from doing so, we don't know. Because the other things is that we must not take executive authority and instruct. We must just be aware about that. Because if we instruct them to do certain things, then you must follow it up the next day for implementation. And whereas you don't have the authority to do it. Okay. Yes. Yes. Although I can't read what you have put on the screen, I don't rely on you, but yes. Are you happy? And then they must report on coordination and collaboration with other government departments in relation to water management agencies. Spy. Then consider creating or looking for new headquarters. This one we are repeating, if you have said this one many times. It is in the Housing Oversight Report. And that document. This one of the DHA to have to look for new headquarters or offices where there is conditions conducive to workers. That is standing in our Housing Oversight Report. Should we repeat it? We don't need to. Because that, again, it has already been communicated to the department. Can you remove 818? Okay. We already have this and approved by the House. And then together with this one of the computers, ensure that the computers or equipment, electronic equipment. Yes. That's what I was saying, is that they are there in the Housing Oversight Report, and these have already been approved and communicated.
Okay, so the Northern Cape one hasn't been
approved yet. No. So then we're removing 818 and seal to 811. 8110. Okay. We agree. All right. Then consider the need to address the human resource, but particularly in the Northern Cape. But should we then restrict this to Northern Cape? Because we went to KZN and we picked up a similar situation. Shouldn't we make a call for them to sort out the issues of human resources? And that other. Shouldn't we that, and just simply remove the particularly in the Northern Cape. Northern Cape just gives us an example. But then it is almost a general thing across the provinces. Are we in agreement, Mama? Huh?
Consider feeling funded, making posts.
Must consider everywhere where they are needed. They should expand these visa facilitation services. Stop. Okay, then 815. You have a right to speak to the Minister of Finance. Yeah? You checked. Yeah. That would be the consequence of this. Is that one day you should call the Minister of Finance and come and sort of go over sideways and ask him why he's not implementing the recommendation.
No, when the Minister of Finance does, did you make specific recommendations to the Minister of Finance to provide a written report to the Commission on that issue? So that's one interface. You get a report from the Minister of Finance.
Yes, but that doesn't really mean that what I was saying is wrong. All that means is that you must expect that we may call the Minister of Finance to come and actually, no. If we put a recommendation to him, that means one day we'll call him to come and account on the recommendation, how he has actually dealt with it. Is that not correct?
I'm not saying you
can. I'm correct.
Yeah, you're correct, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it.
Yes.
If you want to do it.
Yes. But when we put a recommendation to him, obviously is that we expect performance on the recommendation. We expect performance. We can't put the recommendation just for him to go and entertain in his own corner and then and that's it. When put the recommendation is that he must perform on this. And if he doesn't perform, he must have an account. that is bad.
Yes, sir. I beg to disagree the person, particularly because on the heading we say the Minister of Finance should consider. Then everything then under that is consider.
Yes.
You get this 815, it will consider increasing, but consider his actual action.
Because you see, the thing is that who makes financial requests, budgetary requisitions in the Department of Home Affairs? It's the DG. And then it's the one that should actually make the request. And if he needs more money for the IT modernization, then he must make the relevant request for that, and then it is asked to actually juggle around with this budget to finance that, he can't get extra money. It's him that should do that. You really have to ask the Minister of Finance outside the representation of the EG, then that to come in and say, get the money, IT modernization. Outside what the DG has of the department management think is the thing that they should do. Can we really do that?
Yeah.
Because we are disempowering the DG as the accounting office. Because what is happening is that when we do this, the DG may make requisitions of funds and account for total budget in the MTEF. And then on the IT modernization, then he doesn't do it. And then the finance minister is 42 hours, and then just you throw this money. So there it is. But then you expect the DG to suspend the money and account on the money that he has not requested.
Okay.
I'm just simply throwing the things in front of you that if you want the DG to account, then you must be responsible for the budgetary requirements that he wants. He must go through him. He must go and stand in front of treasurer and argue for additional money for IT modernization. And if he convinces the budget committee, then he must account in spending that money and deliver on it as well. Hussein and the Gumed, Nisi.
I agree with you, but it doesn't mean that because he can do that, that we can't do this. You can do both.
it does not suggest that if you don't make this recommendation, that he can't do things. He can still continue doing it. But as a community, we recognize that this thing is a problem, and we can make those recommendations. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It doesn't undermine the DG's role and function in this thing. It's saying we recognize that this is a problem, and we would like to see this happening. You can, and suggest it to the Minister of Finance. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. I would suggest we leave it there as it exactly is.
Because your apology has spoken and if you need wise to be there, then you come and close it.
Okay.
No, Chair, I just wanted to comment that the DG is an accounting officer. So let's allow the DG to do his work properly. Let's not interfere. Because we won't be able to account for that money. Only the DG can be able to do so.
Now I'm convinced, yes, it should be our DG who should consider more funding to Home Affairs to prioritize the completion of IT system modernization program. Then perhaps it can be the 81.15. And then we will take out the Minister of Finance. Because sometimes, really, the neglections where they say, no, but where do you get the right to this thing? But you can strengthen the arm of the DG to the Department of Finance by saying that you should consider increasing funding, particularly for modernization, because a lot of offices really are not really having computers that are up to date. A computer is outdated within 3 years, I do agree. He is accounting, our DG accounts to us. And the DG accounts to us as well.
Yeah, I will clearly move that we will remove the Minister of Finance. And then we really call upon the department to allocate more resources in the IT modernization, remember, as well as the inspectorate. As well as the inspectorate. You see? I would say so, because we are going to make the two ministers suffice, and then again as well is that you know, it's politics is politics, and then a small little deviation may create a lot of problems. Is it a little bit, how does it read?
Instead of this week's
yeah.
Idea, it's a increased funding to prioritize completion of IT system modernization of the IT
modernization. I would like you to include for additional funding to the inspectors. That's the source of our problem.
The issue on the effect is already absent.
Yes, that's the top. 1.1 for me. Yeah. Okay. Alright. No, it's fine. That's the case, it's fine. And then 8.21 for the government printing works. Okay, now that is fine. It's fine. Then 8.31, the Electoral Commission, is fine. 8.32. No, but the broader awareness, what do we mean? Make it very clear with voter education. With voter education, make it much more clear. Yes. Ensure the measures are needed to ensure
voter education, voter registration, and the actual voter, was it?
Actual voter registration. Education on registration and actual voter. I would say, ensure voter education and actual voter registration.
Yes. Okay. That makes life a lot more easier for me. Mm. And then, 833. Yeah, just the electoral commission. To report. Is that correct, Adam? 833, we are calling for the electoral commission to report on voter registration in the first court.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. To report. Not just to prepare the data's report. We call on them to report in the first quarter of 2016. That's it. Eh? And they would have done some sort of voter registration dates and then just report what is there. What's happening? Okay. We are done. Who's moving for adoption?
We need one more.
No, is there. Remember, there's another one is here. No, he has not. He has not. He has gone to the toilet. No, they have gone to the toilet. They have not left. They have not. Mr. Food is moving for the report to be adopted with the amendments. Anyone who's seconding her? Yeah, they said they are cooperating. I'm sure they're going to cooperate at the end of the meeting. Oh, Honorable Fulan?
I second this,
Chair. Honorable Fulan is seconding for the adoption of the report with the amendments. I think I need to thank you all members and then for this particular exercise. Then you will get it cleaned with the amendment and then you'll send it to your email and then I'll sign it sometime tomorrow morning. I will receive it today, then it must be sent to you. And then sometimes if there's any bonus for the period then my home. Otherwise 9 o'clock tomorrow morning then I sign the report to go to the SEC. Yes. And then we don't have minutes today, nothing. Thank you very much for not having the minutes of the previous meeting. This report. Now let's allow it to be tabled in the ADC tomorrow. So that it must just be cleaned and then it reaches your hands and then it goes to their own quality control system in the quality section. There is other people that actually supervise us without our permission, of course. And then they must do that, and then when we tie it up, then we will actually tie it to the 87. Thank you very much. And then we need to actually prepare ourselves, honorable members, for two things. One, not two, three. One is this, the one that is coming on the IEC for party funding. We must receive that report and resolve. Two, then there is a report on public holidays. A report on public holidays, it has been issued by the relevant commission, and it has been sent to me, it has been sent to Parliament, but it has not yet been sent to us as a committee. But the minute it's referred to us, it will need our attention. And then also, of course, there is a challenge in the, what is that, the immigration, I think so, which the department wants us to correct in the form of a committee deal. But there is still some attention given to that particular amendments that they want to convince us to deal with them. And then for possible attention this year, before next year.
and then you will be formed accordingly as those things pass away to us. And then the PMA bill, it has been submitted to Parliament by this draft. And then I'm not sure whether the actual bill is. So the draft that has been submitted is just an intention. It's not an intention that it is coming. And then we must ready ourselves together with the refugees amendment bill. They are drafts. It's just for visualizing us. So we are going to have a marathon. There's a possibility that we may finish Christmas here. We make special arrangements that we go home at the end of November. You must expect that. Okay. Thank you very much, and then this meeting is adjourned.